Krishna began to clap along with them, just like an ordinary child. The Supreme Lord Krishna, being completely controlled by the gopis, began to sing and dance, just like a puppet in their hands. So that reminds me of a similar pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be naughty and in his childhood, and then his mother would chastise him. And then, for example, when the Brahmana came to the house of Jagannath Mishra, and whenever he was offering his, making the offering to his Bal Gopal deity, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and ate the offering. So in this way, he did it three times. Twice he did, and then on the third time, the Brahmana started to cry, saying that, why are you... Like, he was complaining and he started to cry that each time he was making the offering, this child is coming and contaminating his offering. He's eating up what he was offering to Krishna. Then finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, you are calling me to come and eat the food. And then when I come and eat it, then you start crying. What kind of person you are? So, in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to him that he was Krishna himself. He showed himself. He actually showed him his Sadbhuj form also, that he was Krishna himself, and now he has come as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the gopis, after Mahaprabhu did that the first time when he did that, when he ate the food, then the gopis were actually, I'm sorry, not the gopis, the neighbor, the ladies from the neighborhood took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu away. And because Jagannath Mishra wanted to beat him up, he got a stick in his hand and he was about to beat up. But the Brahman actually stopped Jagannath Mishra and he started to tell him that he's a child, he did it without knowing, so don't beat him. And after all, if you beat him, it won't really serve any purpose, because children should not be treated with fear. Treated in such a way that they develop fear. And then the ladies came and took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu away. So then they started to clap and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started to dance. And at that time they actually made fun of him. He said, you lost your jati, you lost your caste, because you ate the food from this Brahmin who knows who he is, where he came from. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you see, I am a cowherd boy. So I am a cowherd man. So if a cowherd man eats the food of a Brahmana, then he doesn't lose his caste. General understanding is that if someone eats the food from a lower caste, then he loses his caste. He becomes degraded. So Mahaprabhu said that if a gwala, if a cowherd man eats the food of a brahmana, then he doesn't lose his caste. And no one could understand why Mahaprabhu was speaking like that. And then they took him away and then they were clapping and Mahaprabhu started to dance. So Krishna also used to play the similar pastimes with the gopis of Vrindavan. Sometimes Mother Jasoda used to ask Krishna to bring her a wooden plank for sitting. Although the wooden plank was too heavy to be carried by a child, still somehow or other Krishna would bring it to his mother. This is the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. Like he's playing just like a little child. Why? Because Krishna wants to experience those mellows. If Krishna plays the role of the Supreme Personality of Godhead all the time, then could he experience such dealings between a mother and a child? Krishna would have missed it. Therefore, Krishna plays his pastimes in Vrindavan just like an ordinary child. As I was explaining the other day, that whatever is here on the material plane must be existing on the spiritual plane. There cannot be in the material, something cannot be on the material platform unless and until it is there on the spiritual platform. If the material nature is a perverted reflection of the spiritual sky, then we have to understand that whatever is there in the reflection must be existing in the reality. Can there be something in the reflection that's not existing in the reality? No. So if a human child can have this kind of dealings with his parents, then we have to understand that somewhere in the spiritual sky, these sort of exchanges must be existing. Now, where does that exchange take place? Where? In Vaikuntha? No. Then where? In Ayodhya? In Dwarka? In Mathura? Only in Vrindavan. So, Krishna actually is the original enjoyer. So Krishna enjoys all these exchanges with his devotees. And those exchanges are reflected on the material platform in this way. On the spiritual sky, Krishna is the Supreme Son, and Nanda Maharaj and Jasoda Mai are his parents. And Krishna enjoys such loving exchange with Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda. And Krishna plays just like a little child. And Jasoda Mai, just like a mother, says, "Krishna, bring me that plank to sit down." Sometimes the mothers ask the child to bring the plank. Of course, nowadays those exchanges are not to be seen anywhere because the whole world is becoming so mechanized. But in India, these kind of exchanges were very much prevalent. Still now in the villages, these exchanges are there. The ladies would cook. While cooking, they would sit down on a plank and the child would play around, and the mother would ask the child, "Can you please bring that plank?" Because she cannot leave the pots that she is cooking with. And the child, Krishna is a little child, only about 4 or 5 years old. And Krishna, who by his will is making innumerable universes float in the space, here is seen struggling to bring that plank. And sometimes Nanda Maharaj would ask Krishna to bring his shoes. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upon whose lotus feet the great yogis are meditating for millions of years, and still they cannot fix their mind on Krishna's lotus feet. Still they cannot perceive Krishna's lotus feet. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, carries the shoes of Nanda Maharaj on his head. And that also, it seems that he is struggling to carry those shoes. So in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, performs his pastimes in Vrindavan. Although the wooden plank was too heavy to be carried by a child, still somehow or other, sometimes while worshipping Narayan, his father would ask him to bring the wooden slippers. And Krishna, with great difficulty, would put the slippers on his head and bring them to his father. When he was asked to lift some heavy article and was unable to lift it, he would simply move his arms. Like Krishna could not lift the thing, so he would move his arms. In this way, daily, at every moment, he was the reservoir of all pleasure to his parents. The Lord was exhibiting some childish activities before the inhabitants of Vrindavan because he wanted to show the great philosophers and sages searching after the Absolute Truth how the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, is controlled and subject to the desires of his pure devotees. Krishna becomes controlled by the desires of his pure devotees. Although Krishna is the prime mover, but he is moved by the desires of his devotees. That is the wonderful position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One day, a fruit vendor came before the house of Nanda Maharaj. Upon hearing the vendor call, "If anyone wants fruits, please come and take them from me." Like this is also, it used to be quite a common scene in India. The vendors used to vend, hawking their commodities. They would say, "Fruit, who wants fruit?" Like even when you travel by train, you hear they're vending chai or coffee. I remember there were, in my childhood, I used to see these vendors used to come, especially in the midday, and they would hawk their commodities. Like, even in Calcutta, even nowadays, you can hear them in Calcutta. They say fruit, they would vend fruits. I remember one man used to come vending hot patties. He used to carry patty in a steel trunk on his head, and he used to have cakes and other stuffs also, and we were very attracted. And ice cream vendors. So anyway, that is, in even 5,000 years ago, this custom was prevalent. Actually, we notice that in India things don't change very much, or things did not change very much. But now, of course, things are changing very drastically because of the Western influence. But now it's a competition. Let's see who can influence whom. Whether West is going to influence East, or East is going to influence the West. East means India, and the rest of East is actually very degraded. Prabhupada said, actually the easternmost country is India. Although people think that China and Japan and other countries are Eastern, but they are actually not Eastern. They are the furthest West. India is the easternmost country. And China is the furthest west. And the more west you go, more degraded the people are. And the people in China are the most degraded. Like you can see how degraded people are from their food habit and from their behavior. The Chinese, as they say, they would eat anything. There is a joke that they eat anything that flies excepting aeroplanes. They would eat anything on the water excepting ships, and they would accept any, they would eat anything on the ground that rolls excepting motor cars. So they would eat anything and everything. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, a couple of some years ago, brought a clipping from a Hong Kong newspaper that said that there was a party in a very, very big hotel, and the delicacy in that party was that they chopped off the top part of the of a monkey, the skull of the monkey, when the monkey was alive, they were eating the brains of the monkey. Like they, it's a very, very cruel, very degrading. Even in Burma, during Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, he sent his preachers to Burma to preach Krishna consciousness. And when the devotees used to eat, when the devotees used to cook food with ghee, the village people couldn't stand that. And what was their delicacy? Anyways, let's not talk about it. It's very, very degrading. So one day, a fruit vendor came before the house of Nanda Maharaj. Upon hearing the vendor call, "If anyone wants fruits, please come and take them from me." Child Krishna immediately took some grains in his palm and went to get fruits in exchange. In those days, exchange was by barter. Therefore, Krishna might have seen his parents exchange fruits and other things by bartering grains, and so he imitated. But his palms were very small, and he was not very careful to hold them tight, so he was dropping the grains. The vendor, who came to sell fruits, saw this and was very much captivated by the beauty of the Lord. So he immediately accepted whatever few grains were left in his palms and filled his hands with fruits. In the meantime, the vendor saw that his whole basket of fruit had become filled with jewels. The Lord is the bestower of all benedictions. If someone gives something to the Lord, he is not the loser, he is the gainer by million times. So this is how Krishna reciprocates. Someone spontaneously offers something to Krishna, like the food vendor here. Like he didn't know, actually what Krishna brought, the handful of grain, was not actually the price of the fruits. But he offered it to Krishna simply out of his love for him. Krishna, he filled up Krishna's hands with fruits. And as a result, what happened? His basket became filled with most precious gems. That reminds me of another incident. One day, Madan Mohanji was the deity of Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami used to beg once a week. He used to go out begging, and whatever he used to get, he used to maintain himself with that. So Madan Mohan came to Sanatan Goswami and wanted to go with him. So Sanatan Goswami told him that, "Look, you are the son of a king. So why will you come with me? I'm just a beggar. I won't be able to take care of you properly." Then he kept on insisting, no, please take me with you. I want to go with you." Then Sanatan Goswami said, "Okay, I can take you on one condition, that you have to accept whatever I offer you, because I can't make these elaborate arrangements for you. I just serve, I maintain myself by Madhukari, so whatever I get, I'll offer you, and if you have to accept that." Then Madan Mohan agreed. But one day Madan Mohan complained to Sanatan Goswami, "Sanatan, can't you get me some salt? Because when you beg, you don't get salt, you don't bake salt. They give you grains, they give you vegetables, but no one actually gives you salt." So Sanatan Goswami would just accept whatever he got. So he didn't get any salt. So he couldn't offer salt, and so whatever he used to cook without salt. Now Krishna has very special taste, so Krishna started to. Krishna told him, "Can't you get some salt with your food?" Then Sanatan Goswami said, "Look, I told you, that you have to accept whatever I get. And I told you that I can't make these elaborate arrangements for you. Now, if you want salt, then you make arrangements yourself. So, in the meantime, so Krishna accepted. So, in the meantime, one businessman was carrying his commodities in a boat through Jamuna. Those days, Sanatana Goswami used to stay. Jamuna was very close to Madan Mohan's temple. And that's the place where Sanatana Goswami used to stay. There was no temple at that time. There was just a... He used to live under a tree. And there was a small little hut made of dry leaves. So the boat got stuck and there was no way he could move the boat. So he went to look for some men and get some help. And then he saw some smoke from the forest. So he came to the forest and found Sanatana Goswami. And he told him that, look, my boat got stuck, can you help? And he said, how can I help? And he said, and Sanatana Goswami was surprised. The boat got stuck in Jamuna? Never happens like that. Then he asked, what are you carrying in your boat? Then he said, well, I was carrying salt and some fruits. Then Sanatana Goswami said, oh, I see. So he said, there is a boy in that hut, maybe you can go and ask him. He can help. So the man went and saw the deity of Madan Mohanji. So he offered his obeisances to the Lord and prayed to him and said, if my boat gets released, then the profit that I'll make from this transaction, with the profit I'll build a temple for you. So then when he went back, he found that the boat is released. The boat was released. And not only that, when he went to the boat, he found that all the salt that he was carrying turned into camphor. And all the fruits that he was carrying turned into gems. And he made a huge profit, naturally. When the salt turns into camphor and fruits turns into gem, you can well imagine the amount of profit he must have made. And with that profit he built that Madan Mohanji temple. Therefore, if we serve Krishna, we don't have to worry about anything. Krishna will provide. Whatever we need, Krishna will provide. We have to have that faith. That Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, if we believe in Krishna, if we believe that Krishna is God, then is there any difficulty in believing or accepting that Krishna owns everything? And if Krishna owns everything, and if we try to serve Krishna, then won't Krishna supply us whatever we need for His service? Sanjay, what's your comment? Do you think Krishna will provide? Yes? Do you have any doubt that Krishna is God? It seems that you have some doubt. What's that? Do you have any doubt that Krishna is God? Babai, do you have any doubt that Krishna is God? Sure? Okay. Now Ramprasad, if Krishna is God, then Krishna owns everything? Isn't it? Krishna owns everything? Everything. Yes or no? Or somebody else owns some other things and Krishna doesn't own them. Does everything belong to Krishna? Now, if everything belongs to Krishna, then can Krishna give us something if we need it? Is it? So, when will Krishna give us? Jyotirmay? Yes. when we want to serve Him, then Krishna will give us everything that we need. But if we don't serve Him, then Krishna will take everything away from us. Isn't it? So we should be very careful that we use everything in Krishna's service. Everything must be offered to Krishna. One day Lord Krishna, the liberator of the twin Arjuna trees, was playing with Balaram and the other children on the bank of the Jamuna, and because it was already late in the morning, Rohini, the mother of Balaram, went to call them back home. But Balaram and Krishna were so engrossed in playing with their friends that they did not wish to come back. They just engaged themselves in playing more and more. When Rohini was unable to take them back home, she went home and sent Mother Jasoda to call them again. Mother Jasoda was so affectionate towards her son that as soon as she came out to call him back home, her breast filled up with milk. She loudly cried, "My dear child, please come back home. Your time for lunch is already past." She then said, "My dear Krishna, oh my dear lotus-eyed child, please come and suck my breast. You have played enough. You must be very hungry. My dear little child, you must be tired from playing for so long." She also addressed Balaram thus, "My dear, the glory of your family, please come back with your younger brother Krishna immediately. You have been engaged in playing since morning and you must be very tired. Please come back and take your lunch at home. Your father Nandaraj is waiting for you. He has to eat, so you must come back so that he can eat." As soon as Krishna and Balaram heard that Nanda Maharaj was waiting for them and could not take his food in their absence, they started to return. Their other playmates complained, "Krishna is leaving us just at the point when our playing is at the summit. Next time, we shall not allow him to leave." His playmates then threatened not to allow him to play with them again. Krishna became afraid, and instead of going back home, he went back again to play with them. At that time, Mother Jasoda scolded the children and told Krishna, "My dear Krishna, do you think that you are a street boy? You have no home. Please come back to your home. I see that your body has become very dirty from playing since early morning. Now come home and take your bath. Besides, today is your birthday ceremony. Therefore, you should come back home and give cows in charity to the brahmanas. Don't you see how your playmates are decorated with ornaments by their mothers? You should also be clean. You should also be cleansed and decorated with nice dress and ornaments. Please, therefore, come back. Take your bath, dress yourself nicely, and then again you may go on playing." In this way, Mother Jasoda called back Lord Krishna and Balaram, who are worshipable by great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. She was thinking of them as her children. So we're continuing to read from the 11th chapter of Krishna book, first volume, Killing of Demons, Vatsasur and Bakasura. When Mother Jasoda's children, Krishna and Balaram, came home, she bathed them very nicely and dressed them with ornaments. She then called for the brahmanas, and through her children, she gave many cows in charity for the occasion of Krishna's birthday. In this way, she performed the birthday ceremony of Krishna at home. After this incident, all the elderly members of the cowherd men assembled together and Nanda Maharaj presided. They began to consult among themselves how to stop great disturbances in the Mahavan on account of the demons.
In this meeting, Upananda, brother of Nanda Maharaj, was present. He was considered to be learned and experienced, and he was a well-wisher of Krishna and Balaram. He was a leader, and he began to address the meeting as follows. My dear friends, now we should leave here for another place, because we are continually finding that great demons are coming here to disturb the peaceful situation. And they are specially attempting to kill the small children. Just consider Putana and Krishna. It was simply by the grace of Lord Hari that Krishna was saved from the hands of such a great demon. Next, the whirlwind demon took Krishna away in the sky. But by the grace of Lord Hari, he was saved. And the demon fell down on a stone slab and died. Very recently, this child was playing between two trees, and the trees fell down violently, and yet there was no injury to the child. So Lord Hari saved him again. Just imagine the calamity if this child or any other child playing with him were crushed by the falling trees. Considering all these incidences, we must conclude that this place is no longer safe. Let us leave. We have all been saved from different calamities by the grace of Lord Hari. Now we should be cautious and leave the place and reside somewhere where we can live peacefully. I think that we should all go to the forest known as Vrindavan, where just now there are newly grown plants and herbs. It is very suitable for pasturing ground for our cows, and we and our families, the gopis, with their children, can very peacefully live there. Near Vrindavan, there is Govardhan Hill, which is very beautiful, and there is newly grown grass and fodder for the animals, so there will be no difficulty in living there. I therefore suggest that we start immediately for that beautiful place, as there is no need to waste any more time. Let us prepare all our carts immediately, and if you like, let us go, keeping all the cows in front. On hearing the statement of Upananda, all the cowherd men immediately agreed, "Let us immediately go there." Everyone then loaded all their household furniture and utensils on the carts and prepared to go to Vrindavan. All the old men of the village, the children and women were arranged on seat. All the old men of the village, the children and women were arranged on seats, and the cowherd men equipped themselves with bows and arrows to follow the carts. All the cows and bulls, along with their calves, were placed in the front, and the men surrounded the flocks with their bows and arrows and began to blow on their horns and bugles. In this way, with tumultuous sound, they started for Vrindavan. And who can describe the damsels of Braja? They were all seated on the carts and were very beautifully dressed with ornaments and costly saris. They began to chant the pastimes of child Krishna as usual. Mother Jashoda and Mother Rahini were seated on a separate cart, and Krishna and Balaram were seated on their laps. While Mother Rohini and Jashoda were riding on the cart, they talked to Krishna and Balaram, and feeling the pleasure of such talks, they look very, very beautiful. In this way, after reaching Vrindavan, where everyone lives eternally, very peacefully and happily, they encircled Vrindavan and kept the carts all together. After seeing the beautiful appearance of Govardhan Hill on the bank of the river Jamuna, they began to construct their places of residence. While those of the same age were walking together and children were talking with their parents, the inhabitants of Vrindavan felt very happy. At this time, Krishna and Balaram were given charge of the calves. The first responsibility of the cowherd boys was to take care of the little calves. The boys are trained in this from the very beginning of their childhood. So along with other little cowherd boys, Krishna and Balaram went into the pasturing ground and took charge of the calves and played with their playmates. While taking charge of the calves, sometimes the two brothers played on their flutes, and sometimes they played with amlaki fruit and bale fruits, just like small children play with balls. Sometimes they danced and made tinkling sounds with their ankle bells. Sometimes they made themselves into bulls and cows by covering themselves with blankets. Thus, Krishna and Balaram played. The two brothers also used to imitate the sounds of bulls and cows and play at bullfighting. Sometimes they used to imitate the sounds of various animals and birds. In this way, they enjoyed their childhood pastimes apparently like ordinary, mundane children. Once, when Krishna and Balaram were playing on the bank of the Jamuna, a demon of the name Vatsasura assumed the shape of a calf and came there intending to kill the brothers. By taking the shape of a calf, the demon could mingle with other calves. Krishna, however, specially noticed this, and he immediately told Balaram about the entrance of the demon. Both brothers then followed him and sneaked up upon him. Krishna caught hold of the demon calf by the two hind legs and tail, whipped him around very forcibly, and threw him up into a tree. The demon lost his life and fell down from the top of the tree onto the ground. When the demon lay dead on the ground, all the playmates of Krishna congratulated him. "Well done, well done." And the demigods in the sky began to shower flowers with great satisfaction. In this way, the maintainers of the complete creation, Krishna and Balaram, used to take care of the calves in the morning every day, and thus they enjoyed their childhood pastimes as cowherd boys in Vrindavan. All the cowherd boys would daily go to the bank of the river Jamuna to water their calves. Usually, when the calves drank water from the Jamuna, the boys also drank. One day after drinking, when they were sitting on the bank of the river, they saw a huge animal which looked something like a duck and was as big as a hill. Its stalk was as strong as a thunderbolt. When they saw that unusual animal, they became afraid of it. The name of this beast was Bakasura, and he was a friend of Kamsa's. He appeared on the scene suddenly and immediately attacked Krishna with his pointed sharp beaks and quickly swallowed him up. When Krishna was thus swallowed, all the boys headed by Balaram became almost breathless, as if they had died. But when the Bakasura demon was swallowing up Krishna, he felt a burning fiery sensation in his throat. This was due to the glowing effulgence of Krishna. The demon quickly threw Krishna up and tried to kill him by pinching him in his beaks. Bakasura did not know that although Krishna was playing the part of a child of Nanda Maharaj, he was still the original father of Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe. The child of Mother Jasoda, who is the reservoir of pleasure for the demigods and who is the maintainer of saintly persons, caught hold of the beaks of that great gigantic duck and before his cowherd boyfriends bifurcated his mouth, just as a child very easily splits a blade of grass. From the sky, the denizens of the heavenly planets showered flowers like the chameli, the most fragrant of all flowers, as a token of their congratulations. Accompanying the showers of flowers was a vibration of bugles, drums and conch shells. When the boys saw the showering of flowers and heard the celestial sounds, they became struck with wonder. When they saw Krishna, they all, including Balaram, were so pleased that it seemed as if they had regained their very source of life. As soon as they saw Krishna coming towards them, they, one after another, embraced the son of Nanda and held him to their chests. After this, they assembled all the calves under their charge and began to return home. When they arrived home, they began to speak of the wonderful activities of the son of Nanda. When the gopis and cowherd men all heard the story from the boys, they felt great happiness because naturally they loved Krishna. And hearing about his glories and victorious activities, they became still more affectionate towards him. Thinking that the child Krishna was saved from the mouth of death, they began to see his face with great love and affection. They were full of anxieties, but they could not turn their faces from the vision of Krishna. The gopis and the men began to converse amongst themselves about how the child Krishna was attacked in so many ways and so many times by so many demons. And yet, the demons were killed and Krishna was uninjured. They continued to converse among themselves about how so many great demons in such fierce bodies attacked Krishna to kill him. But by the grace of Hari, they could not cause even a slight injury. Rather, they died like small flies in a fire. Thus, they remembered the words of Garga Muni, who foretold, by dint of his vast knowledge of the Vedas and astrology, that this boy would be attacked by many demons. Now they actually saw that this was coming true, word for word. All the elderly cowherd men, including Nanda Maharaj, used to talk of the wonderful activities of Lord Krishna and Balaram, and they were always so much absorbed in those talks that they forgot the threefold miseries of this material existence. This is the effect of Krishna consciousness. What was enjoyed 5,000 years ago by Nanda Maharaj can still be enjoyed by persons who are in Krishna consciousness simply by talking about the transcendental pastimes of Krishna and his associates. Thus both Balaram and Krishna enjoyed their childhood pastimes, imitating the monkeys of Lord Ramachandra, who constructed the bridge over the ocean, and Hanuman, who jumped over the water to Ceylon. And they used to imitate such pastimes among their friends and so happily passed their childhood life. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 11th chapter of Krishna, Killing of Demons Vatsasura and Bakasura. Hare Krishna, any questions? So, yes, Madam Gopal.
Bakasura is she's a personification of some dead thing in devotional life.
Yeah, that's false pretension. You see, there are two birds, swan and crane, right? Now apparently both look alike, somewhat alike. But a swan is really saintly. The swan is the symbol of saintly personality. But a crane, although it appears to be like a swan, and it pretends also it stands on one leg in the water, and as if in a trance, meditating. But what it meditates upon? A fish. It stands on water just to catch fish. So similarly, there are some people, those who apparently appear to be like a saintly person. They even pretend to be meditating. But what do they meditate upon? Dhanam, Janam and Sundarim. Right? Their meditation is on Dhanam, Janam and Sundarim. So Bakasura is pretension. So Krishna destroys that.
Relationship of neutrality, and you explained that actually in the tree
In Vrindavan.
In Vrindavan.
No, I was talking about Vrindavan only. In Vrindavan there is no neutrality. Not no neutrality, but it's not actually neutrality. The predominating mellows in Vrindavan are conjugal, which is the main mellow, and supported by parental and friendship. Parental and friendship is actually supporting conjugal, enhancing the conjugal mellow. Everyone in Vrindavan is actually supporting Krishna's relationship with Srimati Radha.
So, generally, to understand the relationship of neutrality, do you think of trees and flowers?
In Vrindavan.
No.
Anywhere else?
Spiritual.
In the spiritual world. And what's the question?
I was just trying to think, I'm trying to understand through example the relationship of neutrality. And I always understood that trees have a neutral relationship.
Trees can have a neutral relationship, but in Vrindavan, the trees cannot remain neutral. Like when they see Krishna, they start to dance. So where is neutrality? Right? When the trees see Krishna, or hear, first of all, when they hear, trees can have a neutral relationship, but in Vrindavan, the trees cannot remain neutral. Like when they see Krishna, they start to dance. So where is neutrality? Right? When the trees see Krishna, or hear, first of all, when they hear Krishna coming, then they start, with great expectation, they start to wait for Krishna. And as soon as they see Krishna, then immediately they become ecstatic. And how does their ecstasy become manifest? The whole tree becomes full of flowers. As soon as Krishna enters into the forest, different trees bloom into flowers. And all of a sudden, the whole forest becomes a festival of flowers and colors. Then, not only flowers, those who are in friendship, they blossom into flowers. Those who are in parental, bear fruits. They become full of fruit. And some even starts to pour honey as soon as they see Krishna. So in this way, in Vrindavan, the trees are ecstatic. So there is no static state of existence of neutrality in Vrindavan. Jamuna, as soon as Krishna jumps into the river, Jamuna, the waves rush to embrace Krishna. As soon as Krishna puts his feet on the land starts to sway. So everyone starts to dance in Vrindavan as soon as they see Krishna. The cows are not in neutrality, cows are in parenthood. And that's why it's Vrindavan.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna. Oh, tomorrow morning we are going out on a parikrama. We'll do the parikrama of Vrindavan. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I will go together, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj's disciples also will join us. So, we will start right after the 12th chapter of Krishna book, part 1, the killing of the Aghasura demon. Once the Lord desired to go early in the morning with all his cowherd boyfriends to the forest, where they were to assemble together and take lunch. As soon as he got up from bed, he blew a buffalo horn and called all his friends together. Keeping the calves before them, they started for the forest. In this way, Lord Krishna assembled thousands of his boyfriends. They were each equipped with a stick, flute, and horn, as well as lunch bag, and each of them was taking care of thousands of calves. All the boys appeared very jolly and happy in that excursion. Each and every one of them was attentive for his personal calves. The boys were fully decorated with various kinds of golden ornaments, and out of sporting propensities, they began to pick up flowers, leaves, twigs, peacock feathers, and red clay from different places in the forest, and they began to dress themselves in different ways. While passing through the forest, one boy stole another boy's lunch packet and passed it to a third. And when the boy whose lunch package was stolen came to know of it, he tried to take it back, but one threw it to another boy. This sportive playing went on amongst the boys as childhood pastimes. When Lord Krishna went ahead to a distant place in order to see some specific scenery, the boys behind him tried to run to catch up and be the first to touch him. So there was a great competition. One would say, "I will go there and touch Krishna," and another would say, "Oh, you cannot go, I'll touch Krishna first." Some of them played on their flutes or vibrated bugles made of buffalo horn. Some of them gladly followed the peacocks and imitated the onomatopoetic sounds of cuckoo. While the birds were flying in the sky, the boys ran after the birds' shadows along the ground and tried to follow their exact courses. Some of them went to the monkeys and silently sat down by them, and some of them imitated the dancing of the peacocks. Some of them caught the tail of the monkeys and played with them. And when the monkeys jumped in a tree, the boys also followed. When a monkey showed its face and teeth, a boy imitated and showed his teeth to the monkey. Some of the boys played with the frogs on the bank of the Jamuna. And when, out of fear, the frogs jumped in the water, the boys immediately dove in after them. And they would come out of the water when they saw their own shadows and stand imitating, making caricatures and laughing. They would also go to an empty well and make loud sounds. And when the echo came back, they would call it ill names and laugh. As stated personally by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita, he is realized proportionately by transcendentalists as Brahma, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here, in confirmation of the same statement, Lord Krishna, who awards the impersonalist Brahman realization by his bodily effulgence, also gives pleasure to the devotees as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are under the spell of external energy of Maya take him only as a beautiful child.
Yet he gave full transcendental pleasure to the cowherd boys who played with him. Only after accumulating heaps of pious activities, those boys were promoted to personally associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can estimate the transcendental fortune of the residents of Vrindavan? They are personally visualizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He, whom many yogis cannot find even after undergoing severe austerities, although he is sitting within the heart. This is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. One may search for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through the pages of the Vedas and Upanishads. But if one is fortunate enough to associate with a devotee, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. After accumulating pious activities in many, many previous lives, the cowherd boys were seeing Krishna face to face and playing with him as friends. They could not understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they were playing as intimate friends with intense love for him. When Lord Krishna was enjoying his childhood pastimes with his boyfriends, one Aghasura demon became very impatient. He was unable to see Krishna playing, so he appeared before the boys intending to kill them all. The Aghasura was so dangerous that even the denizens of heaven were afraid of him. Although the denizens of heaven drank nectar daily to prolong their lives, they were afraid of the Aghasura and were wondering, when will the demon be killed? The denizens used to drink nectar to become immortal, but actually they were not confident of their immortality. On the other hand, the boys who were playing with Krishna had no fear of the demons. They are free of fear. Any material arrangement for protecting oneself from the death is always unsure. But if one is in Krishna consciousness, then immortality is confidently assured. The demon Aghasura appeared before Krishna and his friends. Aghasura happened to be the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura, and he thought, Krishna has killed my brother and sister, now I shall kill him along with all his friends and calves. Aghasura was instigated by Kamsa, so he had come with determination. Aghasura also began to think that when he would offer grains and water in memory of his brother and kill Krishna and all the cowherd boys, then automatically all the inhabitants of Vrindavan would die. Generally, for the householders, the children are the life and breath force. When all the children die, then naturally the parents also die on account of strong affection for them. Aghasura, thus deciding to kill the inhabitants of Vrindavan, expanded himself by the yogic siddhi called Mohima. The demons are generally expert in achieving almost all kinds of mystic powers. In the yoga system, by the perfection called Mohima Siddhi, one can expand himself as he desires. The demon Aghasura expanded himself up to 8 miles and assumed the shape of a very fat serpent. Having attained this wonderful body, he stretched his mouth open just like a mountain cave. Desiring to swallow all the boys at once, including Krishna and Balaram, he sat on the path. The demon in the shape of a big fat serpent expanded his lips from land to the sky. His lower lip was touching the ground and his upper lip was touching the clouds. His jaws appeared like a big mountain cave without limitation, and his teeth appeared just like mountain summits. His tongues appeared to be a broad traffic way, and he was breathing just like a hurricane. The fire of his eyes was blazing. At first, the boys thought the demon was a statue. But after examining it, they saw that it was more like a big serpent lying down on the road and widening his mouth. The boys began to talk among themselves. This figure appears to be a great animal, and he's sitting in such a posture just to swallow us all. Just see, is it not a big snake that has widened his mouth to eat all of us? One of them said, yes, what you say is true. This animal's upper lip appears to be just like the sunshine, and its lower lip is just like the reflection of red sunshine on the ground. Dear friends, just look to the right and left hand side of the mouth of the animal. Its mouth appears to be like a big mountain cave, and its height cannot be estimated. The chin is also raised just like a mountain summit. That long highway appears to be its tongue, and inside the mouth it is as dark as in a mountain cave. The hot wind that is blowing like a hurricane is his breathing, and the fishy bad smell coming out from his mouth is the smell of his intestines. Then they further consulted among themselves. If we all at one time entered into the mouth of this great serpent, how could it possibly swallow us all? And even if it were to swallow all of us at once, it could not swallow Krishna. Krishna will immediately kill him as he did Bakasura. Talking in this way, all the boys looked at the beautiful lotus-like face of Krishna and they began to clap and smile. And so they marched forward and entered the mouth of the gigantic serpent. Meanwhile, Krishna, who is the super soul within everyone's heart, could understand that the big stethoscope figure was a demon. While he was planning how to stop the destruction of his intimate friends, all the boys along with the cows and calves entered the mouth of the serpent. But Krishna did not enter. The demon was awaiting Krishna's entrance, and he was thinking, everyone has entered except Krishna, who has killed my brothers and sisters. Krishna is the assurance of safety to everyone. But when he saw that his friends were already out of his hands and were lying within the belly of a great serpent, he became momentarily aggrieved. He was also struck with wonder how the external energy worked so wonderfully. He then began to consider how the demon should be killed and how he could save the boys and calves. Although there was no factual concern on Krishna's part, he was thinking like that. Finally, after some deliberation, he also entered the mouth of the demon. When Krishna entered, all the demigods who had gathered to see the fun and who were hiding within the clouds began to express their feelings with the words, "Alas, alas." At the same time, all the friends of Aghasura, especially Kamsa, who were all accustomed to eating flesh and blood, began to express the jubilation, understanding that Krishna had also entered the mouth of the demon. While the demon was trying to smash Krishna and his companions, Krishna heard the demigods crying, "Alas, alas," and he immediately began to expand himself within the throat of the demon. Although he had a gigantic body, the demon, choked by the expanding of Krishna, his big eyes moved violently and he quickly suffocated. His life air could not come out from any source, and ultimately it burst out of a hole in the upper part of his skull. Thus, his life air passed off. After the demon dropped dead, Krishna, with his transcendental glance alone, brought all the boys and calves back to consciousness and came with them out of the mouth of the demon. While Krishna was within the mouth of Aghasura, the demon's spirit soul came out like a dazzling light, illuminating all directions, and waited in the sky. As soon as Krishna with his calves and friends came out of the mouth of the demon, that glittering effulgence light immediately merged into the body of Krishna within the vision of all the demigods. The demigods became overwhelmed with joy and began to shower flowers on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and thus they worshipped him. The denizens of heaven began to dance in jubilation, and the denizens of Gandharva Loka began to offer various kinds of prayers. Drummers began to beat drums in jubilation. The brahmanas began to recite Vedic hymns, and all the devotees of the Lord began to chant the words Jai Jai. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Lord Brahma heard those auspicious vibrations which sounded throughout the higher planetary systems, he immediately came down to see what had happened. He saw that the demon was killed, and he was struck with wonder at the uncommon glorious pastimes of the Personality of Godhead. The gigantic mouth of the demon remained in an open position for many days and gradually dried up. It remained a spot of pleasure pastimes for all the cowherd boys. The killing of Aghasura took place when Krishna and all his boyfriends were under 5 years old. Children under 5 years old are called Kaumara. After 5 years, up to the 10th year, they are called Pouganda. And after the 10th year, up to the 15th year, they are called Koishor. After the 15th year, the boys are called youths. So for 1 year, there was no discussion of the incidents of the Aghasura demon in the village of Braja. But when they attained their 6th year, they informed their parents of the incident with great wonder. The reason for this will be clear in the next chapter. For Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is far greater than such demigods as Lord Brahma, it is not at all difficult to award one the opportunity of merging with his eternal body. This he awarded to Aghasura. Aghasura was certainly the most sinful living entity, and it is not possible for the sinful to merge into the existence of the Absolute Truth. But in this particular case, because Krishna entered into Aghasura's body, the demon became fully cleansed of all sinful reaction. Persons constantly thinking of the eternal form of the Lord in the shape of the deity or in the shape of a mental form are awarded the transcendental goal of entering into the kingdom of God and associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can just imagine the elevated position of someone like Aghasura, into whose body the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna personally entered. Great sages, meditators and devotees constantly keep the form of the Lord within their heart. They see the deity form of the Lord in the temples. In that way, they become liberated from all material contamination and at the end of the body enter into the kingdom of God. This perfection is possible simply by keeping the form of the Lord within the mind. But in the case of Aghasura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally entered. Aghasura's position was therefore greater than ordinary devotees or the greatest yogis. Maharaj Parikshit, who was engaged in hearing the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna, who saved the life of Maharaj Parikshit while he was in the womb of his mother, became more and more interested to hear about him. And thus he questioned the sage Sukadeva Goswami, who was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam before the king. King Parikshit was a bit astonished to understand that the killing of the Aghasura demon was not discussed for 1 year, until after the boys attained the Pouganda age. Maharaj Parikshit was very inquisitive to learn this, for he was sure that such an incident was due to the working of Krishna's different energies. Generally, the Kshatriyas or the administrative class are always busy with their political affairs, and they have very little chance to hear about the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna. But while Parikshit Maharaj was hearing these transcendental pastimes, he considered himself to be very fortunate because he was hearing from Sukadeva Goswami, the greatest authority on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Thus, being requested by Maharaj Parikshit, Sukadeva Goswami continued to speak about the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna in the matter of his form, quality, fame and paraphernalia. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 12th chapter of Krishna. The killing, he was trying to test Krishna.
But when he looked around, he saw Krishna sitting with the boys and he was taking prasad. And the calves are also grazing in the pasturing ground. So Brahma became very surprised. And he wondered, how is it possible that he could understand that he stole the cows, there's no way he put them into sleep. There's no way those cows and cowherd boys could go back and start eating with Krishna. So he started wondering, something must have happened. And then he realized that actually this personality who is playing as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan with his as an ordinary cowherd boy with his cowherd boy friends is none other than his Lord and Master Narayan. Because besides Narayan, no one actually has the potency to expand himself into unlimited forms. So Brahma then realized his mistakes and came to Krishna and he begged forgiveness. Please, my Lord, forgive me. So that will be discussed in the next chapter, or next two chapters. And there is another point, like Krishna actually fulfills everybody's desires. There are many gopis in Vrindavan who actually had parental relationship with Krishna. And they wanted to breastfeed Krishna. There are fathers who wanted to treat Krishna as their own child. There are cows that wanted to feed Krishna their own milk. So Krishna in one shot fulfilled all their desires while teaching Brahma a lesson. Because Krishna himself expanded into all these cowherd boys and into calves so that all the elderly gopis could breastfeed Krishna and all the cows could feed Krishna their milk. And there is another point here. They say that at this age, Krishna actually, at this age, it was, I think Krishna told that, Krishna told Nanda Maharaj that this year was very good for marriage. So all the girls in Vrindavan should get married. So Nanda Maharaj always accepted Krishna's advice. And so he made arrangements. He being the king, he could make the arrangements. And he got all the girls of Braja, all the marriageable girls of marriageable age, married to different cowherd boys. So in this way, actually all these girls got married to Krishna. So when Krishna danced with the gopis in Vrindavan, he was not actually dancing with anybody else's wife. He was dancing with his own wife, with his own wives. And of course, what to speak of anybody else's wives, Krishna actually is the husband of even the husbands. So if Krishna dances with anybody, there's nothing wrong in it. Even if Krishna may not be formally married to some girl, but Krishna is the supreme husband. So if somebody dances with Krishna, there is nothing immoral about it. Or if Krishna dances with somebody, there's nothing immoral about it. As a matter of fact, everyone wants to dance with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Manjari?
Is Lord Brahma aware of Krishna's pastimes with gopis? Isn't he aware of that?
What's that?
Is Lord Brahma, is he aware of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis?
Whether Lord Brahma was aware?
Yeah.
Yeah. Brahma watches Krishna when Krishna dances rasa dance. He comes flying in his swan and stays up in the sky, and they all watch the rasa dance.
So then why didn't Brahma say the gopis are the greatest devotees?
Why didn't Brahma say that?
Yeah.
In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you mean? In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you mean? because the purpose was to show the gradual elevation of devotional platforms. You know, step by step, Sanatana Goswami took us to the highest platform. If at the very beginning, even Narad Muni actually knows that the gopis are the greatest devotee. Yeah. So here we have to understand that these are the arrangements of Yogamaya. Yogamaya makes them forget or bewilders them. But that's a transcendental bewilderment. Mahamaya's bewilderment is material bewilderment. Right? When we get bewildered in the material platform, that is Mahamaya's work. But there is kind of a bewildered platform. So that spiritual bewilderment is caused by Yogamaya. Therefore, although in the spiritual platform everyone is situated in absolute knowledge, isn't it? Everyone is situated in absolute knowledge on the spiritual platform. Then how come they forget? Like for example in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys, they forget that Krishna is God. Does it mean that they don't have the absolute knowledge? No. Although they have that, I mean, their position is transcendental to Vaikuntha. So they all know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Yogamaya makes them forget that this Krishna is God. And they can't figure out whether he is God or whether he is friend. He is their friend. But, and they, finally they conclude that better to accept Krishna as our friend. When it's a doubt, when there's a dilemma, whether Krishna is God or Krishna is their friend, then they opt for Krishna as their friend, not Krishna as the God, as the Supreme Personality of God. Yes. After that, after 1 year, Brahma returned them. You see, Brahma's 1 minute, 1 second is our 1 year. So Brahma just turned around and looked at us, and he saw what actually happened. So he felt very embarrassed. So he came to Krishna and he prayed to him for a big forgiveness. And he returned all the boys. They also were married. They continued being there, being the wives of those boys. But they did not actually touch them. Because they all were Krishna's property. That's also due to the arrangement of Yogamaya. Yes, Kandak Manjari.
It just says like Lord Shiva, he wanted to enter into the Vrindavan pastime, so he took it from the Skolachari. So did Lord Brahma also take any time?
Not that I know of.
Because he said he flies on the
Oh no, he watches. He doesn't participate.
So people can watch, but to participate,
Right. People can see it, but in order to participate, they have to go through some bona fide channel. I see. That Barsana Hill? I see. Very good. Okay, any other question? Yes.
I asked how such a nice family to give all the answer. And some of the reason why the power stopped is that Leela, which is the agent,
Brahma stealing the car? Because Prabhupada became very sick. You see, Prabhupada, actually these chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, up to 13th chapter, Prabhupada did. But Prabhupada translated lying on his bed. You know, he couldn't even turn on his side. He was lying on his bed, and one devotee used to read from the Sanskrit Bhagavatam, and another devotee used to hold the dictaphone in front of Prabhupada's mouth, and Prabhupada would translate and give the purport. So that's how Prabhupada translated. Till the last drop of energy that Prabhupada had, he used it to translate. And he translated only up to that much. If Prabhupada could, he would have positively translated the rest of the Bhagavad. At this point? What's that?
I think it's not on a occasional poison.
Occasional? You mean whether there is some esoteric meaning? Let's just take the direct meaning. Well, Prabhupada it's not that Prabhupada didn't translate it. He did not translate. Prabhupada actually gave the Krishna book before, which is the 10th canto. So sometimes some people say, less intelligent people say that from other groups that Prabhupada didn't want to translate Srimad Bhagavatam, the, you know, Ras Panchadhayi, that is from 29 to 34 chapters. And that's where Prabhupada stopped in Brahma Mohan Leela. But the thing is that Prabhupada himself wanted to translate. It's not that Prabhupada didn't want to. Prabhupada wanted to translate. And, well, if Prabhupada didn't want to translate, if that was the case, then Prabhupada could have stopped in 28th chapter. Why on 13th chapter? There are so many other pastimes of Vrindavan where Krishna is killing the gopi, killing the demons and... Anyway, the transcendental activities of a pure devotee cannot be judged by material intelligence. So it's best just to leave it up to Prabhupada's desire. Like he didn't want to, so he did not. And not that he didn't want to, it'll be a mistake to say that. He could as much as he did. As much as he could, he did. And he could not do any more. Actually, Prabhupada should have virtually stopped translating Srimad Bhagavatam in 5th or 6th chapter. You know, those last 4 or 5 chapters that Prabhupada translated, it was actually an inhuman endeavor for Prabhupada. Okay, any other question?
Well, Prabhupada wanted us to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita because we have no special class going to hear it every day. Should the devotees study it themselves after they have read Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, or is there special occasions to class again?
In some temples they have the classes on Chaitanya Charitamrita Saturday morning instead of Bhagavatam class or Sunday morning. But the main thing is that, you see, we have to find time to read these books. Right? Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, then Chaitanya Charitamrita. Those who have finished reading Srimad Bhagavatam, they can read Chaitanya Charitamrita. And actually, Chaitanya Charitamrita is very sweet. Like, the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam has become, you know, perfectly presented through the activities of Mahaprabhu and his devotees. Okay then, today some Krishna book. So, stealing of the boys and calves by Brahma. We read that. We are prayers offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. Stealing of the boys and calves by Brahma. So let me see. Yeah. When Balaram saw this extraordinary exchange, now what's that extraordinary exchange? Who remembers?
Krishna became cows and calves.
Very good. And what happened?
Cow. Huh?
And then what happened?
Brahma.
The cow, one day when they were pestering their cows, then the cow in Govardhan Hill, all of a sudden the cowherd men noticed that the cows all of a sudden noticed that the calves were also tending on the ground below Govardhan. So the cows rushed towards their calves with great affection. So I'll read that paragraph. When the cows were running down from the top of Govardhan Hill, the men who were taking care of them tried to stop them. Elderly cows were taken care of by the men, and the calves were taken care of by the boys. And as far as possible, the calves are kept separate from the cows so that the calves do not drink all the available milk. Therefore, the men who were taking care of the cows on top of Govardhan Hill tried to stop them, but they failed. Baffled by the failure, they are feeling ashamed and angry. They were very unhappy. But when they came down and saw their children taking care of the calves, they all of a sudden became very affectionate towards the children. It was very astonishing. Although the men came down disappointed, baffled and angry, as soon as they saw their own children, their hearts melted with great affection. At once their anger, dissatisfaction and unhappiness disappeared. They began to show paternal love for the children. And with great affection, they lifted them they lifted them in their arms and embraced them. They began to smell their children's heads and enjoy their company with great happiness. After embracing their children, the men again took the cows back to the top of Govardhan Hill. Along the way, they began to think of their children, and affectionate tears fell from their eyes. When Balaram saw this extraordinary exchange of affection between the cows and their calves and between the fathers and their children, when neither the calves nor the children needed so much care, he began to wonder why this extraordinary thing happened. He was astonished to see all the residents of Vrindavan so affectionate for their own children, exactly as they had been for Krishna. Similarly, the cows had grown affectionate for their calves, as much as for Krishna. Balaram therefore concluded that the extraordinary show of affection was something mystical, either performed by the demigods or by some powerful man. Otherwise, how could this wonderful change take place? He concluded that this mystical change must have been caused by Krishna, whom Balaram considered his worshipable personality of Godhead. He thought, it was arranged by Krishna and even I could not check its mystic power. Thus Balaram understood that all those boys and calves were only expansions of Krishna. Balaram inquired from Krishna about the actual situation. He said, "My dear Krishna, in the beginning I thought that all the cows, calves and cowherd boys were either great sages and saintly persons or demigods. But at the present it appears that they are actually your expansions. They are all you. You yourself are playing as the calves and cows and boys. What is the mystery of this situation? Where have those other calves and cows and boys gone? And why are you expanding yourself as the cows, calves and boys? Will you kindly tell me what is the cause?" At the request of Balaram, Krishna briefly explained the whole situation, how the calves and boys were stolen by Brahma and how he was concealing the incident by expanding himself so people would not know that the original cows, calves and boys were missing. While Krishna and Balaram were talking, Balaram returned after a moment's interval according to the duration of his life, a moment according to Brahma. We have information of Lord Brahma's duration of life from Bhagavad Gita. 1,000 times of the duration of the four ages, or 4,300,000 times, 300,000 years multiplied by 1,000 comprise Brahma's 12 hours. Similarly, one moment of Brahma is equal to 1 year of our solar calculation. After one moment of Brahma's calculation, Brahma came back to see the fun caused by his stealing the boys and calves. But he was also afraid that he was playing with fire. Krishna was his master, and he had played mischief for fun by taking away his calves and boys. He was really anxious, so he did not stay away very long. He came back after a moment of his calculation. He saw that all the boys, calves and cows were playing with Krishna in the same way as when he had come upon them. Although he was confident that he had taken them and made them lie down asleep under the spell of his mystic power, Brahma began to think, "All the boys, calves and cows were taken away by me, and I know they're still sleeping. How is it that a similar batch of cows, boys and calves are playing with Krishna? Is it that they are not influenced by my mystic power? Have they been playing continually for 1 year with Krishna?" Brahma tried to understand who they were and how they were uninfluenced by his mystic power, but he could not ascertain it. In other words, he himself came under the spell of his own mystic power. The influence of his mystic power appeared like snow in darkness or the glowworm in daytime. During the night's darkness, the glowworm can show some glittering power, and the snow piled up on top of a hill or on the ground can shine during